Shavua Tov. Tonight is Zayin Adar. Very auspicious occasion. The Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. A time where we are very reflective upon the traditions. And tonight's Shia, which is the last in the series we've been discussing this entire season before we move the clock tonight. It should be passed around. It should be enough for hope for everybody. Again, we're discussing two things. One, and the relationship between them. One is a particular topic for tonight, which is positions of authority for women. And two is the, as we call it, future challenges, and we shall see how the two relate to one another. As at the end of the Shia last week, we spoke about the Rambam's famous statement of Melech Velo Malka. There are two separate pages that are being handed out. Okay. One about, one will say on top, women and shul presidents. One will say on top, the ordination of women. Okay. But both are the same author. They're both excerpts of longer pieces, as you can see by the pagination. But just to give you a little bit of something to take in your hand, you can get the full text of these by just going online. And the bottom tells you the site to find it. So the Rambam says, Melech v'lo Malka, a king and not a queen, applies to all sroros, all positions of authority. Where did he get it from? Presumably from a Gemara, which tells us that the same thing applies to a ger, to a convert. He too is excluded from positions of authority. And not just to be a king, Mikarab achecha tasim alecha melech, the same exact pasuk, Melech v'lo Malka, has that pasuk in Parashat Shoftim as well, Mikarab achecha to exclude a non-Jew or even a convert. But the Gemara tells in the Masechta Kiddushin that it applies even to other positions, such as one who's in charge of the weights and measures of the town or of the water supply of the town. So the Rambam put two and two together. We got four. Here you have a Chazal, Melech v'lo Malka, with respect to a woman. And here you have a Gemara, which tells us that Ger, who's also excluded, the same as a woman, extends to other positions of authority, such as being in charge of the weights and measures or of the water. You put two and two together. The same as a convert is excluded, so too a woman is excluded. Goes past Melech v'lo Malka. That's simple. Rambam, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out where the Rambam got it from. That seems to be the obvious where he got it from, although the others disagree for various reasons. But the most fundamental question of all, of course, is how do we define authority? Now, in the context of a shofet, there's a famous Tosfos about Devorah. How could Devorah be a Hishoftos Israel? How's that possible? It goes against all the rules. Tosfos gives three answers. Whenever there are three answers, it means that none of the three is a slam dunk. Otherwise, you wouldn't need three. Some say it's an exception, because there is a kosov. Some say it's called kiblu aleihem, which means, it's very important to understand what it means in Tosfos. It means that whenever there was a case of two individuals who are having a dispute, they can accept upon themselves anybody to be the judge. Anybody. Could be a woman, could be a non-Jew, could be anybody. Doesn't matter. Because it's not a position of authority. It's just that two people decide that they're going to have their case arbitrated in this particular case for this particular individual. It's not an appointment. It's not a position. You can go to anybody in the street. Yeah. Someone can say, I want you to adjudicate this what I have with somebody else. Doesn't mean you're appointed. You're the person to take care of this particular situation. So that's what some suggest with respect to Devorah. And there are other answers as well. My Rebbe had a very famous explanation, which is it's famous in the following sense. We've spoken in the past about a very, very powerful position that my Rebbe took in opposition to Rabbi Rachman, Oliver Shalom, with respect to the concept of Tav Lemesav, Tandav Lemesav Armalo, that a woman would rather be married than be single, even if her husband's not so ay. And this has relevance in Halacha. And he famously, in attacking this position, said, if that's the case, all the chazakos are bottled, all the assumptions are null and void. I should stop saying Shira Masech the Yavamis and the Masech the Gittin. Everything. He was really unusually upset. Maybe it was not that way. He was a very calm person. But he was very, very, I would say, almost polemical in castigating this opinion. But most people don't realize that was not the main theme of his drasha that day. It was a drasha about Gerus. I have the three CDs. I have it. You can probably get it as I got it. And the main topic is about Gerim. And there he writes, he says also that if you're not a sincere convert, it's nothing. which is for a different discussion, not for now, that's a new crisis, the conversions these days. But he's bothered by a problem which bothers others as well. Shemaya and Avtalion were the Rebbeim of Hillel. According to many authorities, they were actual Gerim. Yet they were on the Bezdin. You look in the Zugos and Pirkei Avos. He had a fascinating explanation which he wrote that he said that there are two different pronouncements by a Bezdin. One is what he called the legalistic analysis, and then there was a formal pronouncement. And he claimed that, amazingly, that Shammai and Avtalion were the most scholarly of their time, and therefore, of course, they participated in the legal analysis. But when it came time to the formal pronouncement of what the halacha was, they recused themselves. They're not qualified. They stepped aside, and the other people who had been trained by them, who were the beneficiaries of their inordinate and wisdom, which was new, which encompassed all of Torah, despite the fact that they were unable to be part of the official pronouncement of the Bezdin. A remarkable interpretation, which my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik has in that drasha. Anyway, it obviously is something which has been discussed by many people over many years, and we're not going to come to any final conclusions today, but I think it's important to at least look around and see some of the main points. So as you can see over here, in the first issue, which is about shul presidents, let's take a look over here in the particular position of Rav Moshe Feinstein. After all, what a great man. Rav Moshe Feinstein, if I'm not mistaken, was also born on Zion Odom. That's why it's called Moshe, if I'm not mistaken. So, also one of the heroes whose 25th yahrzeit falls out this week. So how appropriate it is to read his words. Okay, this is the first new paragraph. I'd like to focus on Moshe. Okay? Some say it's what's... Let's go. It was the case of an almana who wanted to be a mashkichat kashrut. He said, the Bar Rambam would not allow it, but he found a different way. How did he find a different way? That she wouldn't have the final word. What does that mean? Rav Moshe assumes that a mashkiach is a position of authority. You know why? Because he, although his salary may come from a particular proprietor, is really working against the proprietor. He has to say, if you, Mr. Proprietor, have now served something which is not kosher, and we're withdrawing our certification. So that's a position of authority. So the way Rav Moshe got around it, because he wanted to have a parnasa, what did he do? He made some rabbi will be the mashkiach, what's the final word, and the woman will work for him. She'll get the salary, because she's putting the hours, and he'll have the shtempel. Right? So that's how it works. I guess that's how it works in Riverdale too. Riverdale too, the rabbanim are in charge, but the one who does the work is a very wonderful rabbi named Rabbi Usher Bush. You may have seen him walking around the stores. So, you know, if Rabbi Bush would say, I want my wife to help me out, and she should also be mashkichat kashrut, we'd say yes, based on this tshuva of Rabbi Moshe. But at the end of the day, it's about a rabbanim that gives its stamp. So Rabbi Amzel wrote to Rabbi Moshe, I'm afraid, he said, people come along and take upon themselves all sorts of leniencies. I could point a woman as prime minister of the state of Israel. Oy, oy, oy. They may even appoint the woman as president of a shul. Ooh. Okay. So Rav Moshe writes as follows. As far as the president of Medinas Yisrael, he writes as follows. Ein onamach royal anhogas b'malchus tisham. We're not responsible for the state of Israel. Shiva v'noseinu rabbi meisel kofrim umurmin. Ve'ein mischashinim da'adei oseinu klum. They're not consulting us in the state of Israel. As a matter of fact, as you well know, they appointed Golda Meir, who was a woman, as a prime minister. I know they came to my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, to complain. He was not with the Mizrahi. How can the Mizrahi be part of the coalition when Golda Meir is the prime minister? So Rav Soloveitchik looked at him and said, and tell me, Ben Gurion is kosher to be the Torah leader. He doesn't believe in anything. So the same way as he's not kosher, so she's not kosher. What are you bothering me? I was just, you know, he knew how to respond. Okay? Okay. Okay. Now, Ulashema Yimana Isha Lebatek Nesirish of Nesirish America. We're not worried about it. Why? Because they won't follow, they will have to follow their rabbi. The rabbi will undoubtedly prohibit the president because he'll defer to the position of the Rambam, even though there are other Rishonim who perhaps disagree with the Rambam. And that's what he says. And then he has the following. Ubarur, this is the next paragraph. Shem Yizdamen Be'ezam Mokam Sherotz Namanos Ve'ezamini Rak O Ishu Kofer O Balaveres O Ishak Shera. A choice of a frum woman or a man is machal Shabbos, and you just can't do anything else. What should we do? Vaday tzarach l'sayesh yimanu esa isha k'sheira for lo esa isha kovah arosha. There you go. Rabbi Moshe says, how can you argue with this? Certainly, you better have a woman than a man who is not from. It seems to be quite obvious. I want to jump ahead to the present time, where there is a major issue about a shul president. It's not, when I say present time, I'm going to go back 40 years, a little less than 40 years. A friend of mine, now he's related to me, Rabbi Mark Karasik, was very, very close with the Soloveitchik. He was his shamus. He served him very loyally. As a matter of fact, when I was appointed to the Rav, here, and I wanted the Rav, my Rebbe, to sign to write a letter for me for the journal back in 1974, Rabbi Mark Karasik, was helpful in procuring a letter from Rav Soloveitchik's night. Getting a letter out of him was like pulling teeth. It's just briskers. They don't like to write things. So he helped me out. It was printed in that journal, which exists somewhere. In any event, so when he shortly thereafter went to St. Louis to assume a rabbinical position, and they wanted the president to should be a woman. So he consulted with the Rav, and the Rav said, absolutely not. Better resign your position as Rav than allow a shul president. Again, this is my Rebbe. He was not that way. This is not his normal position. He was not so doctrinaire. But he felt strongly that the president of a shul was a position of Sarara. Comes years later, Rabbi Shmuel Golden of Englewood has a problem in the shul, where there's a more qualified woman and a less qualified man. I don't think it's quite as drastic as Moshe's case. And he didn't know what to do, so he called her Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz. Rabbi Schwartz said, I'm not really... And this is what he told me on the phone. I asked him, what exactly did you say? Because he's been quoted in... Rabbi Schwartz says, it's fine, a woman president. Said, why not? That's not at all what he said. He said he's uncomfortable with it. It's not traditional. He's a very traditional person. Rabbi Schwartz was very traditional, very conservative. But in this particular case, it's a horah shah, only for this case, where if the woman wouldn't be president, he said, there'll be 40 families would walk out of the shul in protest because the man wasn't so qualified. I don't know the details of what happened in Englewood. He said, in this particular case, it's okay. He didn't say it's always okay. I asked him, why is it okay? You know what he answered with me? The president of a shul is not a sarara. The president of a shul is not a position of authority. Wow.
Is that Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz?
Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz. He thinks deep down that the president of the shul is not a position of authority. My guess is, when he was a rabbi, he ran the rabbi like the shul like with an iron fist. So the president was a nobody. So he was a rabbi. That's my guess. I didn't want to answer any personal details. Now he's no longer rabbi of a shul. But he felt it was not a position of authority.
The president fired him?
He was there.
That's the board.
So the board is also interesting. Interesting. Let's keep going. Right in this page 10. Let's keep going about the Rav's position. Okay, one issue discussed was a woman being shul president. The Rav is clearly opposed. Okay, so it's not just that I heard it from my friend Rabbi Karasik. During his conversation with Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Wolfish asked the Rav whether women could serve on shul boards. The Rav responded, "He saw no reason why women could not serve as a board member. It was not sarara. The board member is not considered authority. Why?" Since the final decision was made by the board and not by the member. Fascinating. It's only one person in a board of 15 people. The members merely had input. The Rav did pass that women could not be shul presidents. Presidents have certain prerogatives and that constituted sarara. Okay? While there was no isser, the Rav also felt it unwise to have women serve as vice presidents. A heartbeat away, right? Because it could imply that she could serve as presidents, which they could not. The Rav says the women serve as machshikicha kashas, right? And as he thinks it's perfectly mutter. The women may be even better than men. Whoa. That's against Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe considered it to be a position of authority, machshikicha, and the Rav said no. Yes.
So if you have a presidium, like with more than one president, that a woman could serve on it with the same argument they use for the board?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Whether a woman could serve on a presidium according to this thing. Maybe you would have to have a presidium of three. In other words, a board, every person has at least, you know, has a majority opposed them. A presidium of three, perhaps, according to this logic. Yes?
So I'm wondering, on the board, could a woman be a majority?
Presumably not, according to this logic. And I'm sure my Rebbe would be opposed to a presidium on the same way as he opposed the vice president, because presidium could easily lead, he wouldn't be opposed to it. Would he bend in a pinch? Probably yes. That's what I'm... So we've summarized so far page 10 that I gave out to everybody. And I want to just now we've summarized this page, go back to the beginning of the page and see what it says there, because it's you don't have the beginning of it. You don't have the line preceding the beginning of it that I'd like to share with you. It's an attempt to define Srara. And it's really very, very hard to define. What is Srara? Okay? So... In the previous pages of this very learned article, he wants to know, what is Srara? Okay, so without going into every detail, but obviously there are 9 pages before page 10, a chunk of which is, what is Srara? Fascinating history. There were those who felt that a woman couldn't even vote. Voting is Srara.
The grandmother couldn't vote.
That was in America before 1919. But in Eretz Yisrael, who held a woman could not vote? Just to give a few examples. Rav Kook. The famous liberal modern Rav Kook is on page 7, if you get all of it on your own. He said women could not vote. He claims here that that's when the Eda Haredit broke off from the main portion of the Israeli body. Why? Because since they said that women could not vote, they were disproportionately outvoted. In other words, the parts of the group should have a woman vote, would have twice as many votes as they would have. They felt it wasn't fair. They made their own Eda Haredit. Fascinating. A little on page 7. Okay? There are others who are more lenient. It's assumed today by everybody that women can vote. That's for sure. No, there's almost no one who disagrees with that, to my knowledge. I believe even Eda Haredit, the men don't vote either. That's how they solve the problem. But everywhere, any organization in Israel where the men vote, the women vote, including the Belz HaChassidim and the Gerach HaChassidim, they vote en bloc and they vote... Two to a family, yes.
But usually the population just works out. There's usually more women in the population, which means that if everybody has the right to vote, women will have the power.
That's a fascinating demographic point that has some merit. I think that the majority is so slim that it really doesn't amount to much. Okay. Now we have as follows. What about a convert? Remember, a convert is also a serious issue. Wants to be being principal of a school. Quote Rabbi Grossness, who says, hard to believe, there's no srara in being a school principal, even though he hires and fires, because decisions are always made with, and here's where we pick up our page, an educational committee, and therefore there's no srara. Huh? Are the facts true? Is it always an educational committee? I don't even know if those facts are true. It's true that he initiates the action by bringing it to the committee, but he doesn't make the decisions alone, and therefore it's not discretionary power. He has an approval of an educational committee, and therefore it's not a problem. And Rabbi Israeli thought there's no problem being a mayor. I don't understand this either. Member of a Knesset, that I don't understand. A member of the Knesset has no power. He's one of 120 people. Okay, but again, it's obviously very tricky as to how we define Srara. It is. I have nothing really to say about more than this. My view is that a president of a shul is a srara, because it has discretionary power. And frankly, our shul is so old-fashioned, the women aren't even on the board. But we
don't even have elections. We don't even have meetings.
I'm not going to go into this in greater detail. Our shul is somewhat... It's more of a
monarchy.
I would say perhaps a benign monarchy. We spoke about Dvorah before you came. Now, since our time is somewhat short, I'd like to jump to the question which has rocked the world, which is women rabbis, or the ordination of women. Many of you have a page which is called the rule of the Rav and ordination of women. Those of you who don't have, I may have in one extra page. I have one extra sugi for you. Okay. Here too, it's called page 2, and again by Rabbi Frimmer as well, and he put this on the blogs. There was a lot of back and forth of what the Rav had to say about this issue when the whole issue of Rabbah and Marat came up, and he wanted to know how come no one is quoting the position of the Rav. After all, these are people who are intellectual disciples of the Rav, even if they never were privileged to learn with him in the Shir, and shouldn't they be putting more focus on what his position was on this matter? So what was his position on this matter? That's important to clarify, I would say. You have to clarify what did he say? What was the Rav's position on this matter? A very good question. What exactly did he say? So, Rabbi Frimmer writes, if you look in the Rav's published Shirim on Yerodeya, published in the very one of the first Shirim, he discusses the question of our custom of the Ramah that the woman should not be a shochetet, shchita, she doesn't slaughter. Why? Nowadays, being a ritual slaughter requires Kabbalah, the authorization, certification of a recognized scholar testifying to the candidate's knowledge of both the theory and practice of shchita. Okay, and therefore, it's called Minu Yakol, from which women are excluded according to the Rambam of Sarora. Quote, he quotes it, he just translates from the Hebrew. Slaughter is no longer a simple matter of permitted or forbidden food. Now, anyone could do that. Therefore, and here we go to the thing that you have in front of you, page 2 of 12. We do not allow women to slaughter based on the Rambam, Mishnah Torah Malachim 1:5, who wrote, we do not appoint the woman to communal position. So a woman may not be appointed to a communal position, and slaughtering has become a communal position. Therefore, it seems that a woman may similarly not be appointed to be a town slaughterer. Okay? So now the question is, can a woman get smicha? That was a big fashion, ordination. So he writes, rabbinic ordination like Kabbalah is authorization and certification by a noted scholar or more, offered by a board of scholars, who verify that the candidate is knowledgeable in the theoretical and practical areas of halacha required for rabbinic communal leadership. If, to the Rav's mind, women are excluded from being appointed as a shochetet, okay, so the same is true to appointing a congregational rabbi, which for millennia has required smicha. Then he quotes the part about the Shul presence, which we already read about. Okay. Let's go to the fourth paragraph on this page. Oh, the same is true, of course, for the synagogue rabbi, who is presumably the final word on religious practice in a community. I hope so. It is true that the rabbi's contract can be terminated. But until that time, it is his rulings that the community is bidden to follow. This is the kind of discretionary power which Maimonides maintained was forbidden to women. I think it's obvious that a woman cannot serve as a rav of a shul, because to my mind, the rav is clearly the position of Sarora. As a matter of fact, if you look at the famous Shul of Avnei Nezer, who discusses the famous issue of Yerusha Sarabonis, does a son have any claim to his father's rabbinate, which just rocked Europe in many, many cases, he says it's based on the fact that the rav has a position of Sarora, and which can therefore, according to same as a melech, who bona beker of Yisrael, pasuk and parashas shoftim, the son who is qualified comes first, has first priority, so it applies to Rabbanus as well. According to the Rav, this is the paragraph starting according, the discussion of whether women can serve as community rabbis is not merely about titles, but about the job description, no matter what you call it, exclamation point. Whether you have smicha or not, whether you're called marat, reverend, or rosh kol, if your function as, or the authority and discretionary power of the community rabbi, that is Sarora, and such an appointment is usur for women. Clear words, I believe the words are completely true, and I'm surprised that there are those who have expressed some different opinions. And some of the different opinions are just sleight of hand, semantical tricks. One of the rabbis wrote, when this whole thing up, why shouldn't women be able to be on the clergy? Clergy, he redefined clergy as being eligible for parsonage, which is a tax, a benefit from the income tax. And he says in the Catholic Church, the janitor is qualified for parsonage because he works for the church. So why is it that a woman who teaches in a school shouldn't be able to have some kind of a title which will afford her a tax deduction. As a matter of fact, that has been worked out in many schools, many yeshivas. I believe SAR among them is a local school. And I believe our own Mr. Metzger was involved in make it done on the up and up, that the women are entitled to the parsonage because they are certified as teachers, whether they have a master's, whatever degree they have, certified teachers, and therefore the same as a Rebbe in that school is entitled to a certain parsonage tax deductions. So were the Morot in that school. That's very nice. If you wanted to find clergy as per the Catholic Church and the United States government, then I have no objection. But that's not really germane to our present discussion. So that's just a sleight of hand. You know, okay, well, I'm a favorite of female clergy. You just redefine clergy. You know, so that's cute, but on a conceptual, fundamental basis, it's meaningless. So I'm just going to make that as one statement. Another very, very distinguished rabbi was quoted in two different... Yes.
Well, what about the actual position of a Mora?
Nothing more than Mora. Absolutely nothing more than Mora.
Well, isn't she, like, whatever her teaching position is that not a position of authority? It's appointed by the community to teach Torah to people.
I don't believe that's Torah whatsoever. Now, first, let me first say for one thing. If the woman is teaching in the Beis Yaakov, or she's teaching women, that's bechlal no problem. If she's in SAR teaching women and men, I think it's still no problem, because it's not really the teachers. That's not really a position of authority. It's just a teaching position. Let me go back. So a well-known rabbi was interviewed twice on this topic and said each time the same thing, that he feels that this is a matter of time. This is what's going to come to my concluding remarks about future challenges, namely, because I won't see it. I will never see a woman rabbi, but it's a matter of time. Now, it's unclear to me what the matter of what's going to change in time. I don't think the halacha is going to change in time. I don't think that this rabbi feels that the Rambam's psak is going to be abandoned in time. What he probably means is that perhaps the role of a rabbi will be redefined to be something more like a clergy. You know, so if it's a clergy, I'll give an example. There's a new term which was bandied about recently called rabbinic intern. Some of you know that this is a famous title. But the title rabbinic intern is so vague and amorphous, it could be completely, it could be filled in two completely different ways. Again, going back to some nearby institutions, without giving any names, there was a rabbinic intern who was a wonderful, wonderful social worker. She served with distinction as a social worker, with the title of rabbinic intern. I don't like the title particularly, but the particular individual served with distinction as a social worker. Let's not kid ourselves. Rabbis are social workers, some more, some less. For some rabbis, that's 80% of their job description, and some is for 10%. But every rabbi is a bit of a social worker. So you're a social worker, fine. When she decided to go to the Holy Land, a successor was the exact extreme opposite. Fulfilling that role, ultimately becoming Marat, Rabbah, whatever title you have, with a, I'm the same as every man kind of an attitude. So I'm not sure what this other rabbi meant. Maybe he felt that down the road, they're going to redefine the rabbi to be more social worker. And if that's the case, the woman will be qualified. I think she's qualified as a social worker. I think most social workers are women. Probably the best ones too. So it all depends by definition. Definition is, of course, critical. Let's now turn to the concluding piece of this page 2 and read together. Some might argue that a distinction should be drawn between receiving smicha, ordination, and serving as a community rabbi. It's only the latter which the rabbi would have forbidden, they argue. Furthermore, individuals with title rabbi serve in a variety of other capacities, education, counseling, kiruv, hospital chaplains, community organizers, or mashkichim. Why should the women be precluded from these positions? The obvious answer before I read any further, they're not precluded from these positions. They're occupying these positions every single day. Look what he writes. Any answer must begin with a clarification of the purpose of smicha. As already noted above, rabbinic ordination is the authorization by an ordained scholar or by a board of scholars who verify that the candidate is knowledgeable in those areas of halacha required for rabbinic communal leadership. Nearly every ktav smicha says just that. If the rabbis of the view that women are precluded from rabbinic communal leadership, would it not be...
When I read a smicha, it says that he knows about Yoredeya and Basar Chalav and things like that. You know, and it does not say that he's qualified in any way to be a communal leader.
I imagine that one has to look more carefully into the small print of every smicha. It varies from rabbi to rabbi and from yeshiva to yeshiva. So let's not quibble about that now. I'm just reading what it says over here. Would it not merze keshikra have the appearance of a lie to give them the certification for just such a role? Would you give a driving license to one that's forbidden to drive? Now, there is a very major problem with this, which we'll come to when I read you from the next page, which you don't have. But since I want to finish this first, let's finish this page first. Yet, as noted above, individuals with smicha serve in a variety of professional capacities, many of which now require bidding ordination. Though smicha certainly adds the credibility and the honor of the role. Nevertheless, one could well argue that if a particular occupation requires the authorization and certification of smicha, then to the Rav's mind, this might well be minui hakol and forbidden for women. We need to find the proper honorific title to fit the job description. Certainly titles like Chaveira, Mora, Yoetzet Halacha are just such steps in the right direction. Perhaps the honorific title Chachama should be adopted for women about Sefer Torah knowledge, but in an attempt to answer the real need, we should not distort the true and simple meaning of smicha. Okay. I have what to say about all these things, these titles. Chaveira, Chaveira means just doesn't, you know, that's nothing. Mora is also nothing. And Yoetzet Halacha is something which has become a certain niche. It's not just, which has its own issues. It's issues which are, to my mind, rather serious. But that we're not going to be discussing it right now. Suffice it to say that Yoetzet Halacha, as it's conceived in America today, the term itself is limited to expertise in matters broadly related to Taras HaMishpacha. In the broadest sense, and there are a number of them serving in the United States of America. There are significant issues. Many rabbis are very much opposed for a variety of reasons. One expressed himself, "I'm not into outsourcing. I'm the rabbi. I decide everything. I don't outsource things to other expertise." Others are fearful that it takes away from the relationship between Rabbonim and half of their populations, and others yet are more concerned that the psak will be wrong, because the rabbi has the breadth of knowledge and the understanding of who the people are, which often Yoetzet will not have, for one of two reasons. A, she's not the rabbi, and B, so much of this is done anonymously or semi-anonymously, where either they literally don't sign their names, or if they do, there's often, they don't know who they are. I'm Chana Weiss. I'm emailing you. You have to assume it's the real name, because you know, I can write also Chana Weiss. You know, you never know. There's anonymity over here. Everybody's not. Rav Henkin was opposed to answering the question on the telephone because you don't know who the person is. So we're not quite at that level. But it's not the ideal way to have these things decided. The women are want to ask from other women, so that's what we have rebbetzins for. We've always had them from time immemorial. Or if they have a particular question, they can send a husband to ask thereof. There are other ways. Again, I'm not here to claim that Yoetzet Halacha is not a more comfortable address for some women. So be it. But a more comfortable address does not always provide the best answer. I believe that to this day, to my knowledge, the Yoetzot are asking the questions of Rabbonim. And therefore, the answers presumably are the correct answers, save for the fact that the Rabbanim are, again, further removed than they would otherwise be from the questioner. But that's just a brief comment. That's not the topic for tonight. But since it's mentioned over here at the bottom of page 2, I felt I should mention it to you. Okay. So now we come to the major problem, which is a ger. A ger. A ger, a convert, we love ger, but haftam as a ger, it says so many times. At the same time, a ger is excluded from positions of authority. How does a ger achieve smicha? So before we go any further, it's very important, Rabbi Reis, who's our present menial, whenever a ger comes, says to him right away, one thing, don't serve on a bezdin, including a bezdin for gerus. There's a particular rabbi who was a ger, who served on the Bezin for Gerus, and according to many authorities, the Geras is no good. That's very profound. That's scary. That means that many people who went through a conversion with three rabbis, one of them was himself a ger, and according to many authorities, that Geras fails on the grounds that there weren't three people who were proper to preside over a conversion process. Not everyone agrees to that. It's a big dispute, but you know, no one wants to be a ger misofik. Bad. So Rabbi Yitzchak, the first thing he says, don't ever be a ger on a bezin for gerus. Generally speaking, a ger can't be on a bezin, period. So the question, of course, becomes, if a ger can't serve on a bezin, then a ger shouldn't be able to serve as a rabbi of a shul either. That's 2 and 2 is 4, as we said before. And the question then becomes, by the very same token, how do you give a ger smicha? You can give a guy a driver's license, he can't drive. That's the question which he raised over here on page 3. Okay? Now he quotes from the Rav in his Shir on Yerodea, which can be found in Shiur Yerav, at the beginning of the Shir on Yerodea. A convert may be appointed to a communal position, but not a position of communal authority over Jews. And it's for this reason that he may judge a fellow convert. A ger can't judge a chaver or a ger. Therefore,
that's the logic they use for why you got a bezdin for a ger.
Some say, but others have disagreed for a variety of reasons, not for now. Therefore, since slaughtering is an appointment of importance, but not a position of authority, a convert may be appointed to be a slaughterer. However, a woman is excluded from all communal appointments, even those with no discretionary authority, and therefore she may not be appointed to the slaughterer. A quotation from the Rav. A quotation. So ger can be a shochet, a charismatic Rosh Yeshiva, he says. Even as judges for the convert community, but not as community rabbis. Women are excluded completely. Therefore,
is more you ever given smicha to a
ger? Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you could get smicha here.
That's exactly what the point of this is.
But not to serve as a rabbi.
Right. But it can be other positions of community appointments which are not, technically speaking, slurah. And he quotes a final point, which he says, if I'm not mistaken, quoting from the Netziv, and as a matter of fact, I think, is it Netziv? Is it Hamekdav over there? Give me a Hamekdav on Dvarim. Should be right there. That's always good to look at things in the original. Dvarim. Yeah, that's right. Dvarim 17:15. Thank you very much. Always look the things inside. 17:15. The pasuk says 17:15. Right, we said mikarev achecha comes to exclude a convert. Ceases as follows. Miyuchas, which means someone who's a Jew, not a convert, eino ela le mitzvah im efshar. Ochen eino le ikuva. Can you imagine that? It's a mitzvah to appoint someone who's a Jew, not a convert, but it's not what he calls the ikuva. Now, if the appointment was made already post facto, it takes effect. Hurdus is the proof. But nachri, it's even the ikuva. A real nachri. And presumably a woman as well. This is what the Netziv says. So it's not exactly the same, a ger, as a woman, as for the Netziv, in Parshas Shoftim. Now, the issues that we are discussing today, the particular local issues concerning women in Sraura, are really a proper final topic as we discuss what we call future challenges. We already mentioned that a particular Rav has been interviewed and twice said that he thinks that the women rabbis are going to come later. I don't understand exactly what he's saying. As I said, I give a possible redefinition of the rabbinate. Otherwise, I don't understand, unless he thinks we're going to reject the Rambam, which is to me something which would be very, very surprising. But the question, of course, becomes, as a general conclusion to the series, what are some of the future challenges that we have to face? Okay? So I'd like to quote some excerpts from a beautiful article, which is by now It's already over 13 years old. By Rabbi Meir Tversky Shlita, one of our very distinguished Rosh Hashivas and neighbors here in Riverdale, in Jewish Action, and later reprinted in Torah Web, he writes clearly, consciously or otherwise, we are products and at times victims of the modern mindset. Consequently, consistent with current societal attitudes, we classify supporting roles as secondary in importance. The truth, however, is otherwise. This already, he'd be hanged alive. Already, not going any further in certain circles. Just for saying this one thing. Okay, and he starts with what we spoke about at the very beginning. Men and women are created equally, exactly the same. Rabbi Soloveitchik said they're endowed with equal spiritual worth, and Rabbi Moshe says exactly the same thing. And the supportive dimension of within the feminine role is not at odds with the axiom of ontological equality or, when necessary, unofficial initiative and leadership. Okay? That he gives an example. He quotes a typical example. When the Chazal and Bereshis Rabbah say that Avram's decision to that share the spoils of war with those who did not actually accompany him in battle. Right? What did he say? David HaMelech learns from him. Those who engage in combat, those safeguarded the camp shall divide the spoils equally. Which means they're the quote unquote the back lines. Equally, they get equal spoils, equal schar, equal everything. We spoke about it in our early, I think our opening shiur, that we believe that women get exactly the same schar as men, and the fact that the Gemara tells us they get more schar than men is precisely because of, in this world, they're getting less quote unquote covered, because people think that the back lines are not as important as the front lines. Okay? Unfortunately, societal attention is disproportionately focused and its accolades showered upon public high-profile personalities. The Torah cherishes and rewards the private supporting role equally. The role of mother and wife does not subordinate a woman's personal religious fulfillment to that of her husband and sons. How do you define religious fulfillment? Refining one's character and channeling all of one's thoughts and actions, energies and abilities to implementing God's will. This I spoke about at Shalosh Shudas, that a person is required in this world to serve Hashem according to his or her own abilities. That's what it is. Subordinating your will to Hashem's will and conforming to divine guidelines. Otherwise, one's service deteriorates into self-worship and self-gratification. Okay, this is it's so important. This is what he gives one example. Rachel, the wife and expression of Rabbi Akiva, toiled and suffered in virtual anonymity, and yet her influence will continue to reverberate eternally. Their transmission of oral Torah is unimaginable with Rabbi Akiva, and he, speaking of his wife to his students, proclaimed, "All that I and you have achieved is due to her." Similarly, our sages teach that the Jews are redeemed from Egypt in the merit of righteous women. Though the sphere of activity is often private, the sphere of influence is potentially unlimited and publicly repercussive. That's that word. Okay? So the fact that she's technically disqualified from certain formal positions doesn't mean anything. We're supposed to be L'shem Shamayim. That's the whole point. L'shem Shamayim. But what about the feminist goals? See, quotes, I'm reading from his about feminism. By contrast, axiologically asserts that men and women must be offered identical roles and opportunities. We must unabashedly and unequivocally teach that this feminist demand within the religious sphere is irreconcilable with Torah norms and values. The vast, unbridgeable chasm that divides divine Torah norms and values from Lahavdil, their secular feminist counterparts, has generated and continues to fuel the present crisis. Rampant misleading rhetoric has confused the contemporary debate on orthodoxy and feminism and camouflaged the core issue. All disclaimers and declarations of halachic fealty notwithstanding, the premise and many positions of feminism are essentially incompatible with our Mesorah, which is tradition. I just saw something which I wrote in 2004 on Torah Web. And I refer to some, I forgot all about it, a book called Feminism and Judaism by someone named Kaufman, I think. It was just given out today with the handouts. And there, I think it's where I got the word from in the title, called Selfism. Feminism is only one subset of selfism. That's what again, Shalosh Shudas. Self-actualization in the sense of what makes you feel good, what makes you feel gratified and satisfied. We believe completely in self-actualization. But only self-actualization when you use all the powers and gifts given to you in the service of Hashem. That's the core difference between what I will call their selfism and selflessness. We spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, right? This is your side is tonight. Moshe Rabbeinu, Zichru Toras Moshe Avdi. Moshe Rabbeinu, with all of everything, he served as an Eved Hashem. Whatever Hashem wanted him to do, that's what he did. Not because he wanted, as Reb Chaim Volozhin explained, he was an Anav, he had no personal agenda. He wasn't interested in pushing himself, only in serving Hashem. Therefore, he is the one who deserved the title Moshe Avdi. This is very, very important. It's a very difficult problem. A difficult problem to analyze. Again, I'm quoting Rabbi Twersky briefly. We can't read this. We have to stop in a few minutes. But just a few highlights. It's such a beautiful article. Upholding traditional Torah norms and values does not bespeak insensitivity to or disrespect for women. Accordingly, the Torah's perspective of dissimilar equality must forever guide and permeate our educational efforts. Very, very important. He says it's clear. But we must do so in an attempt to foster the growth of wise, sensitive, modest, kind, traditional B'nai Torah, not to create unisex, egalitarian, inauthentic orthodoxy. How do you like that? You talk about women's tefillah groups. I don't want to go into it again. They said the Rabbis opposed to it. We already spoke about it. Okay. The Rabbis refused to label them as usher. Proponents of these groups have inferred that the Rav deemed them to be permissible and dismissed his adamant objection to his non-binding, unauthoritative suggestions for public policy, which they respectfully, as a quote, declined to follow. This analysis is flawed, as will be explained. And the word respectfully really isn't quotes. I don't know how can it be respectful. If you ask a shallow, he says, don't do it, you do it. Why is that called respectful? Never understood that one. So Rabbi Twersky has it in quotes. He has a whole discussion of what is halacha, right? Mutter, usser. They're not labeled usser, yet are absolutely halachically wrong and unacceptable. Right? That's what he says.
Referring to the tefillah groups, what was he saying?
That's a particular example. But he's giving other Rabbi Twersky, if you know his style, goes to all shas. And so he says, women's tefillahs are at best halachically wrong. When such groups are unfaithful to halach, or by promoting misconceptions that the participants are actually receiving, receiving authentic aliyot, and the like, they clearly violate the precept of truth. Hey. Under such conditions, women's tefillah groups are indeed usher as well. Even under the best of theoretical circumstances, when everyone is informed that participants are forfeiting the substantial advantage of public prayer, and it is clear that no attempt is made to confer or simulate the true aliyot, the Rav opposed such groups. Perhaps not technically usher, but unequivocally wrong and unacceptable. That's all. So it's binding. The Rav's position is binding. Okay, so I think that we have to conclude by saying as follows. Are there possibilities of change for future challenges? My answer is, I don't know. Possibilities of change require a measure of prophecy. Not because halacha is going to change. Halacha is always going to stay the same. But we've said in so many different Ashiurim that halacha is going to be the same. But when the facts change, the halacha applies them differently. We spoke about tznius and dress. So can halacha change? Halachas don't change. But if the styles change, then the halacha might change with it. We spoke about pants, which maybe it was considered to be beggarish, you know, in the time of the Chasam Sofer. But today, when every woman in America, 90-something% of women wear pants, I don't think it's beggarish. I'm not saying it's right. The question of tznius. But the beggarish issue, no, I don't think applies any longer, because now it's accepted. So therefore, looking in that fashion at the future challenges, I'm not in the position to say that something's going to change or not change. And I said clearly at the beginning that my opposition to many of these things is not the final word till the Mashiach comes, because things can change. Well, yes?
When you say that looking back in the last 2,000 years, things have changed radically, right?
Of course.
So wouldn't it continue to be changed?
I said I don't know.
Why should we stop now?
I'm trying to be as liberal as I can by saying I do not know. You know, I'm speaking to you in English. The same Chasam Sofer would be Pech. had to speak in Yiddish. He was very much opposed to speaking in German or the vernacular because he was fighting a battle against reform.
It's logical to assume that things will continue changing.
Again, things will change. Will these things change? I don't know. Things are certainly going to change. But will these things change? I to say yes, I think it's presumptuous. To say no, I believe is a little bit too strong. So I don't know. I think I don't know. What's wrong? I don't know. Am I required to be a seer, to be a prognosticator? What's going on? Of it? That there will be future challenges? Yes, for sure. What the precise age of the challenge will be, I do not know. One thing I do know is that Rabbonim are, as I mentioned once before, are charged with being Shomrei Mishmeres HaKodesh, as those German rabbis would sign their names in those difficult times when things were changing so dramatically. The change in 19th century Germany from the beginning of the end of the century was iconoclastic. It was from being everyone almost being from, almost everyone being not from. In one century. Just to review the history. And the rabbis are getting up there, we are Shomrei Mishmeres HaKodesh. That's our job, to preserve, to conserve to the best of our abilities. Yes, we live in different kinds of times with different challenges than they faced then, and in many ways we live in much better times where the pendulum is swinging the other way. Nonetheless, there are challenges that have to be faced. I believe strongly that Rabbonim have to be, yes, open to change based upon changing circumstances, but at the very same time, strong in their opposition to things which they consider to be inconsistent with the Torah way of life. Also or not also, as we just heard. And therefore, just to conclude, we believe, as I said in the very opening shiur, as we just mentioned now, that women and men are created with the same level of Kedusha, exactly the same, no difference whatsoever. They have different roles. In some ways, women's roles are as enablers. That itself is considered to be a dirty word in some circles, but we don't consider it that way. We believe it that everyone has his or her own particular and unique role. Women who are clamoring for roles which are not really theirs, the question is, are they really mean L'Shem Shemayim? And Rav Twersky Shlita writes that he doesn't think so. He thinks that they should really be focusing on their own roles as which they've been given. Yes, in a different way. No one is saying that the women should do the same as their great-grandmothers did. Of course, it's changed dramatically since then. But nonetheless, within the parameters of the proper modesty and the proper distinction between the men and women's roles, and who decides at the end? The rabbi. That's part of the rabbi's sarara. Go back to the beginning. That's part of his position of authority to decide what's in and what's out. And as you well know, I believe in a very big tent, and rabbis have authority in their own communities to make all kinds of decisions. That's the very essence of why women are... the very point that I'm making, that women can't be rabbis, by definition, requires that we give rabbis positions of authority. So, you don't want to agree with the decision of a particular rabbi, don't belong to his synagogue. That's all. That's no problem. We try to do things in a positive way. We offer in conclusion a prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should be blessed with the wisdom to confront these difficult challenges in a proper fashion, to give proper decisions. And we, as we say again on the Yartzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, in every generation, Rabbanim have to be following in his footsteps. Yes, lifting the people, we mentioned in the previous drasha, Kisisa as Rosh B'nai Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who picks up the people of Israel despite the difficulties which they face. We should always be Zocha to do so. We should be Zocha in the Schus of Noshim Tzidkanios, Nigel Adol Senemi Mitzrayim. Perhaps in the Schus of the Noshim Tzidkanios of our generation, we'll be privileged to the final Geula of B'mher of Yameinu. Amen.
Amen.
Who's this? Who does this belong to?
I have a question.
Sure.
You spoke about the Havera, Mora, and Yoretzik, Halacha, but not about Chachama.
Fine, no problem with that. How do you turn this off?
No idea.
Never met one. Look at this.
I don't.